Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man that knows that the greatest battle of life can sometimes be on the 4-inch playing field between your ears. Here is the captain.
My head is so big, I believe it's a 5-inch playing field. It's good to be seen and good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
This week we are featuring Pulp Friction by the microbrewery out of Bradenton, Florida. That's called Motorworks Brewing. This is a refreshing IPA with massive, freshly squeezed grapefruit aromas. There are huge citrus flavors that balance out the bitterness and the pine malt backbone. The juicy flavor featured in Pulp Friction will delight IPA lovers and non-IPA drinkers as well. Garage Grade 3 3/4 bottle caps out of 5. And here's some high fives to our friends that filled up the fridge for us this week. First up, a big cheers to Gustav Barreras in Parts Unknown.
And a big we like your jib to Jason in Atlanta, Georgia.
And here we go to one of my favorite cities in the entire world to give a cheers to Haley in Dallas, Texas. Everybody we just mentioned, they went to truecrimegarage.com and helped us out with this week's beer fund. And for that, we thank you.
Yeah, BWWRUN Beer Run. If you need more True Crime Garage for your earballs, check us out on Stitcher, our show called Off the Record. It is for the nasty people across the world. And that's enough of the business.
All right, everybody, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. In Lee County, Florida, at the start of the new year, the local papers were releasing a special report about murders in the area from the previous year, 1995. The title of the article, Murderers Mainly Strangers, and it says Lee County sees 23 people slain in 1995. The article I'm referencing was in the January 2nd Fort Myers News Press. Throughout the article, the newspaper will cite statistics sourced from the FBI, Lee County Sheriff's Office, Fort Myers Police, and Cape Coral PD. One such statistic cited states that nationally, in 1995, about 8 to 10 people were murdered for every 100,000 people. Lee County's population in 95 was about 377,000 people. Lee County saw 23 murders in 1995, which put them well below the national average. The article reads in part, "To be a victim of murder in Lee County last year was in many cases to fall prey to someone who had set out to commit a robbery, burglary, or some other crime. Of the 23 people who died at the hands of others, at least 10 were killed by thieves or drug dealers who stepped over a deadly line. Nationally, only about 17% of murders are committed during other felonies. In Lee County, while the number of murders fell well below the national average, they were well above the stranger-on-stranger murder rate, where someone committing some other type of felony offense kills a stranger in the process. For instance, a young man lost his life trying to fend off a robber who broke into his duplex. The renter was stabbed to death with a kitchen knife. The man who broke into the home killed the young man and made off with his television, later trading the TV for $20 worth of crack cocaine. But more traditionally, murder is a crime of passion, committed by a jealous lover or angry friend. That close connection between victim and attacker makes murder one of the simpler crimes to solve, and one of the least preventable. Some of the homicides in Lee County in 1995 did not fit that mold. Some law enforcement officials were saying, quote, each year, we get further and further away from the old homicide adage, where it used to be the nearest and dearest, said Lieutenant Jeff Taylor, commander of the Lee County Sheriff's Office Major Crimes Unit. But homicides like that of the break-in, the kitchen knife murder, reflected a national trend that began about 3 years prior to 1995. And officials were saying that the relationship between victim and killer were starting to become more anonymous. Nationwide, 23,305 people were murdered in 1994. Among the killings in which the victim-killer relationship was reported, 53% of the murderers were strangers, or the police had not proven a link to the victim. According to Alfred Bloomstein, a professor at the Hines School of Public Policy and Management at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, he says that is due to the growing rate of homicides committed by young people who are more likely to kill someone they didn't know. These statements are true based on the numbers and statistics listed throughout the article. Lee County was smart. While the murder rate there was low, they still did not lose sight of the fact that the killer and victim relationship was changing nationally, and changing even more so per capita in Lee County. Good on them to keep an eye on crime statistics and trends in the jurisdiction that they are sworn to protect and serve. It may or may not come as a surprise to you, but not all law enforcement agencies care this much about crime statistics. In fact, I'm sure that several may just chalk it up to a bad year or bad luck, not taking the time to examine the situation and better understand the situation. One must first identify the problem and understand it before you can come up with a solution. The article we cited came out on January 2nd, 1996. And what the sheriff's office did not know is that murder trend would continue not just for Lee County, but some of the surrounding counties as well. And it would not be the youths of the area that they would need to be so concerned about. Because in the counties of Lee, Charlotte, and Sarasota, Florida, someone was picking up strangers, torturing and killing them, and leaving their mutilated bodies in the woods. This is True Crime Garage, and this is the Hog Trail Murders. One day before that newspaper article ran, a very strange and unusual incident was reported in Northport. Northport is actually in Sarasota County, Florida. This week we will be talking a lot about three different counties, all in the Southwest District of Florida. Those three counties going from north to south are Sarasota County, Charlotte, and Lee County. On New Year's Day, a nice family in Northport were horrified when their dog trotted up the lawn to their house with a human skull in the dog's mouth. This is a much more quiet neighborhood. This is not a high crime area or really even a high traffic area at all. The dog regularly went into the woods back behind the family's backyard. Of course, this is nothing that anyone would even expect that their dog would find, and find so near to their home, I might add, and then bring it to the family's backyard. This is a complete shock and a very disturbing surprise to this good family. So they phone it into police. The police come out to take a look, see what's going on, take a report, the usual police business. But put on your boots, fellas, and bring a forensic team with you, because it looks like you're going to be body hunting in the woods today.
Oh, goody.
Now, almost as unnerving as the dog with the skull incident, the family tells police that that same dog had been bringing bones to the family for about a month now. But they thought that these bones had come from some kind of dead animal or dead animals in the area.
That makes sense.
Detectives scour the area. Now, we don't get a lot of information about the discovery that day, but here are what little details that are revealed by law enforcement. At the scene, police do not find any items, personal or otherwise, that would help to identify who it was in the woods. In fact, they do not find any clothing either. However, police eventually pieced together much of a skeleton belonging to one individual. Later, it was determined that the body was that of a male, and because of how and where the remains were found, they were going to work this as a homicide unless they found evidence to suggest that it was not a homicide.
Right.
So now we have a John Doe homicide, or at least a suspicious death of a John Doe, with an investigation to follow. Now, this is interesting because about 2 years earlier, one county over in the Port Charlotte area, just on the other side of the county line, on February 1st, 1994, a mutilated corpse was discovered. This is when a construction worker stumbled upon a partially decomposed body of a male who was naked and lying on his back. Unfortunately, there was not much at the scene to help police with an identification in that case either.
Do we know if the body was mutilated before it was buried, or was it mutilated afterwards, possibly by animals?
From my understanding, in these two situations, we don't have a burial at all. From my understanding, both are thought to have just been lying on the ground, the victim, that is.
Right.
And of course, with the dog situation, we know that we do have the animal scattering the bones. But with this February 1st, 1994 case, I don't know so much about the activity, the animal activity that came with that one. We do know that this corpse was mutilated and it was found, not buried. It was a male victim found naked, lying on his back by this construction worker.
We have one body that's found by the dog. The dog brings the skeleton back to its owners, and that's in 1996. And then a county away, they find this other unburied but mutilated body in 1994.
Yes, and I know we said one county over, but this is really just a matter of a handful of miles away. It's not really a great distance at all.
Right.
And this 1994 John Doe and this 96 John Doe, this is all a very similar situation, minus the dog, however. Now, at the scene of the 94 case, police do not find any personal items that would identify who it was that they found in the woods. They do not find any clothing either, just like in the 96 case. They do conclude a few pieces of information, though. One, the body had been outside for about a month. Two, they find rope burns on the skin. And three, the genitalia had been removed and discarded.
So the victim was tortured.
The unidentified male victim was tortured and killed likely right where he was found, where he was later found.
Yeah, disgusting.
Now, because this victim was found first, he is later referred to as John Doe number one. The victim found almost 2 years later becomes John Doe number two. But keep in mind, at this time, we don't know that these cases are, in fact, related. Okay, so to recap here before we move on, because this could get a little confusing, we have an unidentified male victim found February 1st, 1994, and then another unidentified male victim found a few miles away, almost 2 years later, on January 1st, 1996. Also, we can deduce from the family story of the dog bringing bones for almost daily for up to a month that at the very least, our John Doe number two was likely dead for a month, if not two, prior to the report that was given once the skull was brought to the family on New Year's Day, 1996.
When I believe both bodies were pretty badly decomposed.
That's right. And I've heard one expert say that in Florida, based off of the humidity, the rate of decomposition is increased. And therefore, you could put somebody in the woods, put a body in the woods, and then later, within a matter of weeks, you could have a skeleton, if not a month. So the rate is certainly enhanced and increased in this area.
We're heading to Florida.
Police much later will say that in all likelihood, these homicides are connected. So we have John Doe 1 and John Doe number 2. Again, to be perfectly clear, in all reality, we actually sit here 20 years, well, over 20 years later, and we cannot say with 100% certainty that these two cases are directly related. But like the late, great Bruce Lee said, be as water, my friend. So we shall stay water, live in the moment as we go through this timeline. After all, this is a very fluid situation.
Don't know if that's what Bruce Lee meant by that.
So we will take it one case at a time, but unfortunately, that also means one body at a time. Because 2 months after the discovery of John Doe number two, a third man's mutilated body was discovered in Northport on March 7th, 1996. In this case, police, through their forensics analysis and autopsy information, they determined that this unidentified male victim was murdered, but he had been killed only 10 days earlier, so only approximately 10 days before the discovery of the body. The male victim would quickly have to assume the name of John Doe number 3. Now, pardon the expression, but because this body was quite a bit more fresh than the other two, that old saying, dead men tell no tales, well, bullshit.
Hey, now.
While they may not be able to reveal all secrets, the body of John Doe number 3 told a tale of a truly and deeply disturbing death. There were ligature marks on both the chest and legs of John Doe number 3's body.
Yeah, meaning that the victim was bound.
The victim's genitals had been amputated. Several sources have stated this is believed to have occurred after death. Now, of course, the detectives, noting the similarities that they are seeing at the crime scenes and on the victims as well, one detail they noticed at the John Doe number 3 crime scene was ligature marks on a tree near the body. One glaring difference that they noticed with John Doe number 3 were cuts on the bottoms of his feet. This suggests that the victim had likely ran through the forest sans shoes. Detectives had to wonder why and who was chasing this man through the woods. Did this man almost get away? And what kind of killer would be out there so ruthlessly and determinedly pursuing the victim?
And it makes you question, was the victim bound before they were taken out to the woods, or were they bound after they were caught? Did they play a game of cat and mouse?
Right. You can almost see this playing out like some kind of horror flick, right? With the killer chasing down the victim at night in these woods and then mutilating the body in that despicable manner before he himself flees the area. Now, let's back up just a little bit here, Captain. At the John Doe number 3 crime scene, detectives took special interest in those ligature marks found on the tree that we briefly discussed. Well, and here's why. So after making that discovery, they decide to go back to the other two crime scenes. And when returning to the crime scene of John Doe number 1, detectives discovered similar damage to a tree near where the body had been found over 2 years prior.
Yeah, you got to applaud law enforcement and detectives on this one. This was a very smart idea.
Then detectives took another trip, this time out to the
donut shop.
This time out to re-examine the area where John Doe number 2 was found.
Right.
There they observed comparable marks on a tree near the spot where the body was found. Because of the very specific mutilation done to at least two of the victims, possibly all three, again, we don't have a lot of information in some of these, and as the captain pointed out, we have a great deal of decomposition that's taken place. But this specific type of mutilation, we should note, this would be a signature. This will indicate to a seasoned and experienced detective that they are very likely looking for one killer in all three cases, or at least the same set of killers.
Well, similar dumping grounds, but like you said, they're miles away. But this is a signature. Now, if you have a body that's not fully decomposed, then you can see the bound marks. Obviously, a body that's very badly decomposed, you can't. But sometimes there is evidence when they do the autopsy that they can see that the victim was bound, even if there's no skin left on that victim.
Well, and more so, you have the mutilation of the body itself with the amputation of the genitals. So a signature found at a crime scene, a murder scene, is an act that is not required in order to commit the crime. Rather, it serves the emotional or psychological needs of the offender.
Right.
The signature comes from within the psyche of the offender, and it reflects a deep fantasy need that the killer has about his victims.
Well, and I'm sure they did some tests because obviously these victims are found in these wooded areas and they're susceptible to having animals come upon them. But there's a big difference between a body being mutilated by animals and a body being mutilated by a killer.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Mine's feeling a little drained. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/garage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/garage.
Have you ever thought about why your wireless bill is so damn expensive? It's all just radio waves. And how much can radio waves really cost? It seems like Big Wireless all got together and decided $100 a month. Now, thanks to Mint Mobile, you have a choice. For a limited time, all phone plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plan's jaw-dropping monthly bills and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. So ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get premium wireless for just $15 a month. I love Mint Mobile. They have great quality. They have wonderful service. I love saving money. Put them together, and I'm getting great quality, great service. a wonderful phone plan for only $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Everyone loves a good family mystery, especially one with as many twists and turns as June's Journey, a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story. It takes you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. You'll step into the role of June Parker and search for hidden clues to uncover the mystery of her sister's murder. Use your observation skills to quickly uncover key pieces of information that lead to chapters of mystery, danger, and romance. And customize your very own luxurious estate island. Think expansive gardens and beautiful buildings. Collect scraps of information to fill your photo album and learn more about each character. And you can chat and play with or against other players by joining a detective club. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
All right, we are back, you hosers.
Cheers, Captain.
Cheers.
So the local authorities in Charlotte County and Sarasota County are armed and equipped with a good deal of information, at least enough at this point, that they believe that they are not harbored or hindered by linkage blindness. They are seeing and finding details telling them that they are most likely looking for a serial offender or serial killer. But one very troubling fact of their case and investigation at this time was they were still unable to identify any of these victims. They did not know who these victims were and therefore how these victims could be possibly related. How did they all end up where they did, and how did each one of them cross paths with the killer? And, of course, it's Homicide Investigation 101. All of our listeners know this, but you start with the victim, you start with their inner circle, and you fan out from there on your investigation. The problem here, you don't know who the victim is, not in just one case, but all three cases.
Well, when you go back to the signatures, obviously the victim's being bound, but I think the big red flag to connect these is the markings on the tree.
Yes. And of course, you know, we should continue to go back to that actual mutilation as well. That's not something that's
right.
Common in any homicide.
I've been trying to forget about that mutilation.
Right. You're right. I probably should have wiped it from my mind as well. I will do the best that I can to achieve that after today's show.
Well, good luck.
Now, what's interesting to me here, Captain, though, is the investigators seem to be hip to the idea that these cases could all be related. But the public was not blind to this either. There was now talk and rumors of a local serial killer being on the hunt in the area. This talk was being bandied about at this time in our timeline. So while the police were still trying to identify and sort out just who each one of these one, two, three John Does were, well, then just 1 month and 10 days later, the following happened. This would be another disturbing find that occurred in a wooded, isolated area, this in Charlotte County, Florida. The following takes place on April 17th, 1996. This is when two storm utility engineers, Thomas Reese and Michael Tisch, are out working in a heavy, wooded, and secluded area off of Highway 41. In fact, this is very, very close to where the body of John Doe was found. I'm sorry, John Doe number one was found.
Like you said, this is in the area of John Doe number one. If I'm law enforcement, if I'm the detective and I get my detective voice on, I'm going to be running cadaver dogs all through this area. But the problem is this victim wasn't dead yet.
Yes. Yeah, so this victim is discovered. We have these two workers that discovered a human skull in the woods on April 17th, 1996. Of course, they called the Charlotte County Police Department. Patrolmen, detectives, and the forensic team arrive on the scene. They secure the location and they start working. Now, they are looking for your typical items, right? Clothing, weapons, or anything else that would help them to identify the victim or would help them in their case, their investigation. They find a single pink fiber on a tree near where the skull was found. Then just a few feet from the skull, they find a decomposed torso and part of a pelvis. The body had been dismembered and was listed as John Doe number 4. But unfortunately, that's not it. A further combing of the area provided a severely haunting spectacle. This is when one of the detectives spotted a still hand sticking up amongst the grass and the debris of the woods. This hand belonged to another body. The body, hand attached, was found wrapped up in a carpet padding lying at the foot of a tree. The victim found in the carpet will be John Doe number 5.
I mean, this is a vicious level of killer. It seems as if there's evidence that he's chasing his victims. There's evidence that he's bounding his victims up and torturing them and then dismembering them and then mutilating parts of their body. I mean, this is a psycho.
Yeah, this is about as weird and evil as it gets. You know, if one were to create a scale of such horrific things. But we're talking about a situation where you can look at this and view this and view what's happened to these, unfortunately, what's happened to these people, either, you know, pre or post-mortem, regardless. What we have here is a situation where the killer is spending a good deal of time with the victims. This is not something where he abducts somebody or uses some type of ruse and 45 minutes later they're dead and he's gone hitting the highway.
Right.
This is all things that are going to take a good amount of time, all of these really disgusting and horrific activities that are taking place.
And we have no clue how long he has them at a different location, whether that location is a house or a workshop somewhere or even just in a van.
Right. We're talking, it could be as short as minutes. It could be days. And again, the problem really goes back to the core of your investigation at this time is that you don't know who any of these victims are.
Yeah.
So you can't determine the length of time that they spent captive or under the control of the killer. It's just all complete speculation with no basis at this point until you can identify any of these victims. Now, they see this hand, the body still attached, wrapped up in carpet padding, lying near the foot of the tree. They would, of course, label this victim as John Doe number 5. We don't know at this point in their investigation. They have these suspicions based off of what they're seeing. We review this and it seems very clear and cut and dried for us, right? That it's John Doe 1 through 5. Well, at the time, they're likely just finding another John Doe and maybe for clarification purposes later applying numbers to them based off of when they were found.
Well, every time you say cut and dry, I keep grabbing my twig and berries.
The state of this body of John Doe number 5 was very much like the previous 4. It was devastating, of course. The victim, in this case, was naked, lying on his back with signs of ligature marks around his neck, chest, and legs, and his genitals, too, had been removed. The detectives found rope marks on a tree near the body. So this is all lining up with what they found at the other scenes. So this find was about 50 yards from where the John Doe number 4 skull and body were found. So not a very far distance from the fourth victim. This fifth victim, and I apologize, there's no nice way of saying a lot of these things. This fifth victim had a head and had likely been killed based off of what they're seeing at the crime scene and the state of the body, had likely been killed within a few days prior to the grim discovery. Maybe even less time had gone by than that.
Right. And like you said, because of the Florida heat and the humidity, they're going to be able to, you know, deduce a time frame.
They also find a tiny paint chip that was found on the body, and rope fibers were found on the ground and a tree. This information quickly hits the streets and the news. So where there was once talk and rumors of an active serial killer in the area, these were sort of whispers from the bushes at that time. Now, with this new news, two more bodies being found, two more male victims, both unidentified, still even after police were done searching the area where the bodies were located. Now, Captain, speculation became rampant about a serial killer, and how quickly the media dubbed the murders the Hog Trail killings.
So we have five victims, five John Does, and obviously, based off science, we're trying to identify these individuals, but there's no wallet found. But we do have, we have this carpet padding found, we have some rope, and we have some paint chips. Kind of makes you think that we should be looking for somebody maybe in the construction field.
Yeah, the media, as said, quickly dubbed the murders the Hog Trail killings, named so for the wooded areas in which the bodies of the victims were found. At least one source that I found, Captain, said that this general area was a popular spot where people would discard pig and hog carcasses, which I'm not sure how right that sounds. I was unaware that there was such a need for the discarding of pig and hog carcasses, that there would be, quote, a place popular for this sort of activity, or that there would even be one place more popular than another for that sort of activity. I also read that this area was an area where one would expect to see quite a bit of wildlife activity, likely an abundance of wild hogs. So that seems to reason that might make a little more sense why we're calling it the Hog Trail murders.
And also it could be that they were hogtied.
Now we will get back to the news covered of these last two bodies that were found here in a minute. But I do have some brief but intriguing information that was discovered during the autopsy process, so I'd like to get to all of that first.
Well, make it fast.
The autopsy from the male victim found in the carpet was determined to be that of a white male victim in his 20s. They found that he was strangled to death with rope. They found several ligature marks on the body that included two ligature marks on the front of his neck, two horizontal marks on the right side of his chest, abraded grooves around his wrist. The victim's genitals had been removed with a very sharp knife or scalpel. Now, all of the ligature marks and abraded grooves were of similar width, but these marks didn't extend to the victim's back. This was telling. The marks were found on the body, and equally as important, were where they were not found on the body. This was consistent with marks that would be left on an individual that had been tied to a tree. They figured the man had been dead for a little more than 24 hours before being found. They will be able to fingerprint this victim because he's not been there very long. They fingerprinted the victim and ran the prints through the system. It was then discovered this victim, who was dubbed John Doe number 5, was rather quickly and positively ID'd as 21-year-old Richard Montgomery.
So we have one identification of five victims.
This young Richard Montgomery had been arrested at one point in his life, and when he was arrested, they took his fingerprints, and thus he was in the system and now identified as a murder victim in a seemingly string of possibly connected murders.
And you're saying, based off of these marks on his body, this would indicate that he was tied to a tree.
Correct. If you think about where I said all of the marks were on the body,
right,
they're all on the front of the body. None of them are on the back. And then we also have similar markings that are found on nearby trees. So you put two and two together, and it would appear that not only were the victim tied to this tree, but he would be tied facing out. His back is up against the trunk of the tree.
Right.
So unfortunately, two more bodies found is bringing us to five possibly connected victims. But the big break here is at least we have identified one of them.
Yeah, I'm guessing at this point, law enforcement is leaning heavily towards the idea that these John Does are connected and that these murders are connected and possibly done by one individual.
So one male victim found in February of 1994. One male victim recovered in January of 96. In March, another male victim recovered. And then in April, again of 1996, two more male victims found. So five victims in total found in three different locations in four separate discoveries. John Doe's 1 through 4, unidentified. John Doe number 5, identified as 21-year-old Richard Montgomery.
And we've, unfortunately, have covered other cases where there's dumping grounds like Gilgo Beach and West Mesa Body Pit. But normally when they found one victim, they're finding the other victims, you know, back to back. But this is almost even scarier because they're finding a victim, later they're finding another victim, and then they're finding victims that are only been deceased a couple weeks or maybe less than a week.
Yeah, we've reviewed some cases where a body is found and then months or even a year or so later, they return to the scene because they're sitting there with an unsolved case and they want to go back to square one. They go back to square one, they find another body. And in those cases, it's it's quite alarming and really disturbing that you learn that, oh, that body had been there the whole time. It, you know, when they found the first victim,
right,
this body was already there. Here in this situation, it's much different. John Doe was found in an area very near John Doe's number 4 and 5, or number 5, who is later identified as Richard Montgomery. But John Doe number 4 and Richard Montgomery, they were able to determine they were not dead at the time that they found John Doe number 1.
Right, but think about that. So this killer has to know that law enforcement is finding these bodies, or we should assume that they might know, and they don't really change their strategy. They don't change their killing fields. They don't change their dumping grounds. Yes, like you said, there's multiple locations, but they're not that far apart. It's a, you know, if you drew a circle around all the three locations, it's a, what, 10-mile radius maybe?
It's difficult to say. I'm looking at it here on the map. The John Doe number 2 was found considerably closer to John Doe's 1, 4, and 5. 1, 4, and 5, again, they were all like kind of within walking distance.
But that's what I'm saying.
Of one another. Like, but yeah, you're
this
right.
This guy is tying his victims up to trees. He is cutting off their genitals. He is torturing them. He's chasing them. He's, you know, mutilating the bodies, probably post-mortem also. And he's going, hey, I like this area. This is my spot. And I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And good luck trying to catch me.
Well, yeah. And it makes you wonder not only to this psychology of the killer, but also what has happened throughout the course of this case, right? You've only identified one of the five.
Right.
Doesn't that make you worry that, oh, John Doe number 1 may have been there for even longer than we had originally anticipated, and the killer was happy to place another body there because John Doe number 1 went undiscovered for so long?
Well, no, and you also, I would be doing searches on trees, because let's say we found 10 trees that had these similar markings. Well, there might be 5 other victims that we haven't found, that maybe were buried deeper or weren't buried at all, and they were completely dismembered by animals. and decomposed completely, where we'll never find them, but maybe we'd find evidence of these tree markings on other trees.
So as said, police get their first big break. This is with the identification of John Doe number 5 as being that of 21-year-old Richard Montgomery. And as we said, identifying him was easy due to the fingerprints. The dismembered body found near victim Richard Montgomery, which it was determined had been there for several weeks, might prove to be a little more difficult, but not as difficult as the first three John Does. This is because of an identifier found on John Doe number 4's body. Detectives found a tattoo on the shoulder of this victim and hoped that this would help to identify this person. So on the nightly news, they tell the public what they had discovered on those hog trails. They showed a picture of what I was hoping to find a description of this tattoo and could not, but they showed a picture of what they were calling a unique tattoo on the nightly news in hopes that someone could identify this person. Well, they get their second break here because after showing this picture on the nightly news, a woman called in and said, "My brother, 25-year-old Kenny Smith, had that same tattoo on his shoulder." So based off of this information and some information that they collect from the Smith family and with the help of dental records, they would later confirm that it was him. John Doe number 4 was Kenneth L. Smith, age 25, from nearby Naples, Florida.
And we've covered so many cases. I mean, this is what, episode number 600?
Oh, slip past the goalie. Didn't even make the, what an accomplishment. We should have celebrated better.
Only two more episodes to go and then I quit.
Right.
I told you from the beginning.
Don't worry, America. I'll do the last 9 by myself.
No, we've covered so many cases, but it's hard to get over how sick this individual is. And and brazen. It's almost like, I am going to torture. I'm going to kill these people. And by the way, you can't stop me. And I'm going to keep coming back to this area. It seems as if this is not just the killing fields or Gilgo Beach. This is just not dumping grounds. This is also his torture chamber.
Well, and I want to, let's hit on something right here so we can move past it going forward, right? Because it would be silly to sit here and constantly say possibly related victims, possibly related crimes. As you pointed out, Captain, law enforcement in this area are actively treating this as these crimes are in fact connected. Again, to be fair, we cannot sit here even 20 years later and say with 100% certainty that they are, but let's go off of law enforcement's assessment of these crimes. They're working it as it's all connected. So we're going to treat it the same. And you're right. You're really hitting in on something here that I think is kind of lost in this overall story. It gets lost in the shuffle here. You either have two very extremely scary situations. One, if they're not connected, then you have two individuals in your area doing very similar horrific crimes that involve mutilation and torture and killing people and leaving them in the woods. That's terrifying, right? Wow. Forget about one person doing it. If you had two or more, horrific.
But however, it is Florida.
However, going off of what law enforcement's assessment is, that these are in fact connected and they're working it as such, you can still sit here and go, my God, how scary is this? Where you have one individual doing this, and as you point out, so brazen that, oh, you found one of my bodies? You found two or three of my victims? Here's another one. Not terribly far from where I left the first one.
Right.
Here's another one. Here's an individual that cannot stop doing this. Even now that the threat of getting caught, the risk level for his activities has increased significantly with the finding of the first, second, and third body, he is still active, still hunting prey in this area. Now, without getting too far into the psychology of this particular killer, now we've said it before, and we'll say it again in the captain's last two episodes and my last 11, that on these cases, especially the serial offender cases, you can build a profile of your killer or killers, but you don't just profile the offender. No, in this case, you're going to profile the offender, the victims, the locations, and the situation. And good old-fashioned detective work and your profile are going to tell you, we got someone hunting in this area, preying on vulnerable men that are either transient or homeless. This is based off of the identification of two of your victims.
Right.
The perpetrator was torturing and killing his victims after tying them to trees in out-of-the-way wooded areas. He mutilates and leaves the victims where they are killed, and then they go undiscovered for some time. The bodies that are found relatively quick show a great deal of trauma and degradation done to the body.
Right.
Florida authorities were looking for one sick bastard.
Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thank you. I'll hug you and kiss you and hug you and kiss you some more for sharing our show with your friends and your family on social media. It means a lot. We get a lot of new listeners by doing that. Keeps the lights on in the garage. Join us back here tomorrow.
And until then, be good, be kind, and don't litter.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.